I'll move the report and I'd be happy to speak to it. This is part of the Club Marion plan. It fits there nicely. It's one segment that won't be contested down along the way. We put in $10,000 as a council for an $80,000 court facility. It is important because the tennis courts are cracking, and whereas we have too many tennis courts throughout our city, we don't have good tennis courts. So for this club to be viable, they need courts that are not cracking. There is no other use for this particular spot. We need to go forward with the Club Marion getting this servicing done. And our support of $10,000 is multiplied eightfold.
We've recently been told that we have an excess of tennis courts in the city by a considerable margin. And I just want to know whether these tennis courts, strategically once again, are the ones that we should retain and renew. So because Mr. Mayor, Councillor Pryor and myself are being lobbied by other tennis clubs as well.
All of the tennis courts in Marion and giving some priority to those that might be strengthened and those that might be replaced to become tennis courts open space or netball courts open space or something else. So why of all the tennis courts in Marion do we have one particular one pulled out ahead of the strategic report? Mr. Valentine?
Thank you, Your Worship. My understanding, members, is that the site across the road is one of the sites that is recommended for consolidating good tennis facilities across the council area. And so it fits with that overall perspective of dealing with the excess numbers, but getting the standards that are required. Yes, if I could just clarify that point then. There is a requirement that the application to the Office of Recreation and Sport must be lodged by the 20th of April. If they don't make that date, they certainly miss the funding round for the year, and it has to be next year.
Yes, the second quarter corporate performance report and the second quarter budget review. No.
There seems to have been a spike. Is there an explanation for that? Was there a single incident or multiple incidents that resulted in a significant spike?
Through the chair, there has been a few incidences, but there's also been a number of re-aggravations, which also count as new incidences within the systems, which is why there is an increase in the lost time injury.
That the following lists be considered. I have taken into account the mayors, the councils local to us, my knowledge through having been on state exec 4 years ago, and so I believe that this is a reasonable list from our city.
Does this council pay this organisation every year? Right. Okay, how much does this council pay to the ALGA every year? Now, can I just get some understanding about on notice? Will that come back as an answer in the agenda of that meeting?
I'm very happy to provide it back as part of the agenda for the next council meeting.
Thank you.
Presidents get paid. State LGA presidents get paid. And all the board members.
Not aware of that, but I'll take that one on notice as well and provide that information back in the same question.
I was always curious about that.
Sure.
Look, I'm happy to move as is. We'll note the request for financial contribution. I think in the past, if any elected members wish to contribute out of their personal funds, then that's up to them. $175. So we remain members of it, but we don't actually contribute to the financial. No. I think, I think it's pretty important, the issue. I think that, this has come out of the sort of horrible things that happened in Hiroshima in regards to the use of the two nuclear bombs against the civilian population. Now, obviously, in times of war, there's all sorts of things that happen, and, but I do remember, I think it was the Labor Minister in the Whitlam government, Ed Gearan, I think that was his name, and he was a prisoner of war for the Japanese, and he he came out of it not hating the Japanese, but hating militarism and fascism. And I think that we really need to look at that. And I think, you know, for us to support peace, especially now when things seem to be kind of aggravated all over the world, I think is a positive thing. And, you know, supporting this doesn't diminish any other causes or any other memories of injustice, anything like that. It's just awareness for one of those. And other groups want us to, you know, approach us to support them in principle. I'm sure that we will consider those on their merits.
Mr. Mayor, I've supported this in the past, and I haven't had much feedback, to be honest, about what's transpiring in this group. It's a noble endeavour. However, did they have a voice on the UN Security Council or something significant like that? Yes. It's pretty cold over there. This is it. It's a bit like the endeavours of the Sister Cities Association. You start to wonder whether it's just an opportunity to get together and have a chat. But there's a price tag attached, and that's what bothers me. But if we are actually going to do this, Mr. Mayor, can I just flag that the council needs to actually start adding all these little savings? And it's quite small saving, this one. And start thinking about the context of our big expenditure. Only a few days ago, we found out about a consultant running our planning department. They're big ones. This pittance compared to that. And the context of what I'm saying, Mr. Mayor, is that we need to be consistent with our approach to saving money, because if we are actually going to have a reduced rate, and we should have a reduced rate, we need to actually work towards it being sustainable. And I'm going to be constantly on that case, because I don't want to be in a position where we don't deliver. In terms of world peace, I mentioned world peace earlier. It's actually being dealt with by higher powers in the city of Marion and the collective mayors of the world. I think we're kidding ourselves if we think that a few mayors getting together in New York is going to change much at all.
Thank you, Your Worship. I've done a bit of research into this, and instead of us contributing financially, one of the things they do also say is that we recognise at some stage during this year and next year the 75th anniversary of the bombing in Japan, and the anniversary is actually the 6th of August. I was proposing to move a motion later in the year for us to just do a recognition of that, which won't cost money, and I think that's particularly because we're looking at the centenary, Anzac centenary this year. I don't want to detract from that, but I think that we do still need to recognise this, but we can do that later in the year.
would invite themselves into cities, rape and pillage, and then leave and sort of treat it as a holiday camp and go on their way. Cities pretty well learned to lock the doors and keep the gates up when armies passed by, even if they were friendly armies. And who can forget the terrible sacking of Constantinople by the Venetians in the 15th century. But the custom therefore grew up that the armies of England, etc., when they passed by a town and wanted to stop for victuals, not to say recreation, would make an arrangement with the local civic leader to enter. And if they were thought kosher, that's the word, would be permitted to come in, and they would be given some sort of document to say that they had the right to enter the city. And so this quaint custom, completely irrelevant to modern day living, is going to be repeated on 18th of April. And really, it's an exercise in the celebration of our military and our nationalism in this city of Marion. And of course, we do host the Warradale Army Camp, so it's not completely irrelevant from that point of view. But anyway, that's the Mayor's little introduction. I'm quite excited about it. Would anyone like to move? Moved Councillor Hull. And is that second? Councillor Byram. Councillor Hull, did you want to speak to it?
Yes. I don't want to seem inconsistent with what I said before. Here I am speaking about not supporting a peaceful world, and then the second motion inviting the army in. I hope it's taken in context, Mrs. Messenger.
If you want to be the mayor for peace, you've got to have the army on side.
Well, absolutely. And it
keep
is
going.
It is the freedom of the entry. It's not the aggressive takeover of the city of Marion. We're inviting them in. And this will be, if it happens, this will be my third one. So I don't go back centuries, but I do go back a couple of freedom of the cities. It is an opportunity to acknowledge the fact that we have the ADF, the army in this case, in our city. I'm not military orientated myself at all. I don't think I would have fitted in particularly well.
Special forces.
Black ops. Something like that. Z force. But I think that this is something that probably in the past hasn't been promoted all that well. One of the observations I made of the past two Freedom of the Cities was that the public did not really appear in numbers much at all. And I think they wondered why the police were standing with a sword in the middle of the road confronting the army. It is a spectacle in many ways. And I think that we as a council, and maybe the messenger can see the wisdom in this, of actually mentioning it so people can actually come and have a look. The army go to a lot of trouble to do this. So a lot of boot polishing goes on, and a lot of dry cleaning. And it happens very rarely. This is the third one that I can remember, and it's an opportunity for us afterwards. I think we're going to be meeting over in the sporting club.
That's right.
To get together with those participating, just say good day and make them feel as if they're actually a part of the community. Some of them would have some stories to tell. They've actually seen active service as opposed to maybe the two previous freedoms of the city. I think it predates Iraq and certainly Afghanistan. So some of them are actually going to be wearing medals of their participation, where, as I remember, medals worn in previous Freedom of the City were not that prolific, quite few. So things have changed. We need to probably do this. The costs involved, I think, for the council is picked up in the public relations budget, as I understand, in the arts and cultural development. There's a grant as well. Well, this... Right. So this is the other point, that we are in this year of commemorating Gallipoli.
Yes, I'll continue there. Thanks, Your Worship. Yes, we are in the Anzac Centenary. There's going to be a lot of publicity about that this year, and I think it will be a good ceremony to have within the City of Marion, and I believe this year we'll probably have a good support of people coming out to see it. Yeah, the ceremony at actually at the Sports Centre, and then marching down to the Cultural Centre and finishing there with the... launch of the Unsung Heroes exhibition, so it will be a great day. And yes, there's lots of hours of rehearsal as well as the spit and polish and stuff done. So yeah, it will be a good day. Thank you. For the footpaths, I'm interested through the chair to Mr. Mifsud or somebody else about are we starting to fall behind, or are we actually completing our work cheaper?
Through the chair, so with our footpaths, there's two components. You've got footpath construction, which is footpaths being brought into areas that currently don't have footpaths at all, which is almost complete. That's the higher chart item. And then the proactive works, where you're quite right at this point in time, they're only 34% completed. We've gone through a very dry period, and as a result of that, there are a number of footpaths lifting in various areas across council, and as a result of that, there's been a large increase in customer requests that the staff are working through. So we've actually recently brought in a contractor to assist with those works, and we're working towards delivering the program as planned.
Sporting facilities at the top and at the bottom streetscapes. Compare the two. Members, for new councillors, I need to draw your attention to a lesson that I learned of old, was that at this time of the year it's time to start looking at whether our budget expectations are going to be realistically met. And therefore, Mr. Mayor, I bring the question whether our streetscape budget is going to be expended. Certainly the sporting facilities will be. I'd like an explanation about that, and flag that I will continue to question this until June.
Through the chair, yes, councillor. In regards to streetscapes, if you note the comment underneath the graph, it actually says that the works are expected to commence during the month of mid to late March, which is the month we're in at this point in time. So you raise a very valid point, but indications are that we should achieve our program as planned.
Our rates report collection. What about the arrears? I just want some information about the arrears, because the overdue I can understand as far as there could be delays. Not sure whether that's just someone whether that's deliberately not paying it. But how have we gone about getting the arrears back for council? Do we get it back, or does it just keep accumulating? Because it is significant.
Through the chair, sorry, ma'am. If I could just clarify, councillor, you're talking about the rates debts specifically. Yep, on page number.
Yeah, through the chair, the arrears obviously represents outstanding rates from previous financial years. Obviously, we try and work with the residents to come to some sort of arrangement to actually meet those commitments. Pending that, we'll actually take some legal action, which can take some time. I suppose at the end of the day, we will always collect these rates over time, because eventually it goes to the situation where property is sold, we will actually collect the rates in time. Yeah, we've got first call on the actual office.
Obviously, we don't want people losing their properties, and I'm guessing if that ever happens, there's probably other issues going on as to why would you lose your home for a few thousand dollars. But thank you for that. It's good to know that it's not something we've let lapse. Have we ever written them off in the past, or you're not aware that we have?
No, through the chair, we're certainly not aware of that ever occurring. You're absolutely right, councillor. This council has always consistently, over a long period of time, chosen not to take the drastic approach of trying to sell up properties under people's feet. Council's always had very strong ethics in regards to that area, which is fantastic. Ultimately, as Ray has indicated, we do have first point of call when the property is either sold or if the property becomes a deceased estate, we still have first point of call against any funds from the sale or through either transfer to a new owner or when the property becomes deceased. Through the chair, these two appendices are appendices that we've introduced into the finance report this calendar year. So yes, that will continue to come through to council, and it did come through in the previous finance report as well.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just very quickly, members, you would have seen this over a couple of council meetings. I've actually, in consultation with the Heritage Society, dropped point two off the motion, so that the and has now been dropped off the minutes. Thank you. I think it's quite simple. The Marion Historical Society and History Centre would like to be made aware of demolition applications, just purely to take photos of the property from the outside, from the street. Yep, sorry. And that's for pure fact that we can't just simply go on to Google or any other online street view and take a snapshot, because they are copyright, and we can't be putting those into our library and our catalogue. So, and it's also good to obviously get high quality imagery of these properties. So, very simple motion. The comments there do state that there is the ability to put a trigger in place into the internal processes so that they can be notified, which is great.
Yes, why is that so? Anyway, I do believe this motion has had a fair bit of airing. It's slightly refined, well, it's considerably refined from when it went up last month and wasn't heard. Thanks. I have conferred with directors Montgomery and Mifsud regarding the matter of how we might record and do checks and balances in order to make sure that visible equity and fairness does prevail across the council in keeping with subsections H and I of section 8 of the Act. There are perceptions in some parts of the council, and certainly in the ward that I represent and Councillor Crossland, that there is inequity and in some cases unfairness. In the case of unfairness, I think the Valuer General's Department is looking into some figures at the moment, but more will come of that, I'm sure, because there are a lot more figures that are to be coughed up. However, I do thank Mr. Mifsud for assisting with the phrasing of this motion and his supporting comments, because this is not about standing any system on its head. It's about adding further quality to an already quite scientific set of matrices for infrastructural placement and upgrade. The main thing is that visibility be achieved, and I think it can best be achieved by means of infrastructural works program details being used along the lines of Mr. Mifsud's discussion.
Infrastructure works taken off at one point. What's the history behind that?
Thank you, Mayor. Very good question. So approximately 2-3 years ago, Council was getting, or certainly seeking to gain a greater understanding about conflicts of interest. And it actually coincided with a budget process in that particular financial year, where within the works programs, which I'll just clarify, council themselves do not approve the works program. They approve the funding to carry out the works, and the works programs are developed quite rightly by the engineering and outdoor staff. So it occurred at that point in time where, say for example, a particular street address was appearing on the works schedules. It happened to coincide with one of the elected members, and at that point in time there was raised anxiety about conflicts of interest. The reality is, when it comes to those particular works programs, there are no conflicts of interest, and it is quite right and appropriate if Council wishes to support the introduction of those works programs for us to put them back in. They're still developed internally, they need to be developed internally so that staff can carry out the necessary works programs in accordance with asset management plans and the long-term financial plan. The responsibility for putting together the works programs is in accordance with the asset management plans. Councillor Gard is quite right. There's actually already quite a complex process in place in terms of matrices and condition assessments, which are independently done. So to answer your question in short, that should not occur.
Yeah, just I think this is a reasonable request. It supports our overall council opinion that we should keep everything open and transparent. And by making this document public, we can actually see where there is spending. And in fact, if there has been some money spent in a particular elected member's road, we'd know about it. Whereas at the moment, it could happen and nobody knows about it. So I think it actually works in favour of the public and supports our open and transparent council that we currently got.
Um,
Mr. Mayor, I'm speaking against this because there is the guiding principle that we as a council address strategic issues. Different parts of the city have got different needs for different reasons and different times, and the north of the city has different issues to the south, and it's important and critical that the administration is able to react to those, both in an emergency sense and also in a planned approach to deal with those infrastructure issues. Now, I've been on the council a long time now. I'm not aware of a disadvantaged part of the city. I am aware that there has been questions raised about distribution of wealth in the city, and a lot of those questions have come back with answers that did not really meet their expectations. And that is testament to the fact that we've probably got it about right. I think that this question's also been raised in the City of Holfast Bay. The very same endeavour by one of the councillors there by saying that we should have equal amount of rates spent in each ward. How flawed can that be? If you've got actually a major tourist precinct, or if you've got, in our case, a major regional centre, or if you've got an emerging centre in the south, how can you possibly deny the infrastructure and the resources to actually to do the job? There are parts of the city that would naturally attract more money to be spent than other parts. It's a given. It's a given. It's happening right now down at Hallett Cove with the new library. There's more to this library than just the library. There's fairly big car parking and traffic management issues that are being dealt with down there now. Connectivity is being addressed. Would I actually deny that part of the city the money it deserves? Because I think, well, no, you're getting too much money, you should be spending it up in my part of the area where I can't really identify the need, but I'm going to say anyway. There has to be an independent and strategic approach to the resources of the city. And like I say, I'm yet to identify an area that has been disadvantaged. Some people might say we should deal with more open space, and we're addressing it that to a large degree tonight. And there's some areas that might like to have more trees. So, you know, I'm sorry I can't agree with this one.
Some discussions on this topic with Councillor Gard, I guess I've got a response, a heads up on this. I think that essentially what I see here is that people think the facilities, this infrastructure in their neighbourhood is not up to standard, and people are saying that look, it's better here, it's better there. So really what we need is something like the streetscape policy that I wanted is let's look at some sort of strategic approach, let's look at some of the consistency. I have no problem with us showing the being open about where things are happening, where the money's been spent, which roads are being fixed. I think that's good to know as part of the budget process. But I guess members of the public and members need to know that that's judged on a needs basis. That should be the reason that that's put in there. So, we may find over 3 years that it could be certain suburbs that get more than others, but the other suburbs, their time will come based on the needs. And as long as we take care in assessing the needs and addressing those needs, then I think that's the way to go. So, I'm quite happy. I think the initial thing that Councillor Gard put up was probably a little bit different, but I think it was sort of talked through to develop it in a way that addressed the issues that he's brought up, but also the issues that other people have as well. So I think that's what we need to do, because we're here to represent our community, we want to get the best of our community. Sometimes there are some changes, and I guess as long as we're told about them. So for example, when the Hallett Cove community facility was put up, there was actually just over $1 million of extra works that were needed for the roads around there, the drainage. And I guess it was brought to our attention that money was coming straight from priority projects, I think primarily in the Woodland and Mullawarra ward. So because that was brought to our attention, we were able to negotiate that, the funding was arranged in a way that made sure that we needed the money early, so we spent it at Pallet Cove, but that we didn't push back those other more critical, as far as more critical as in there was failure rates were higher and things like that in the other suburbs. So as long as we have those discussions and people are aware of it, I think that's important. So I will support it.
Yes, I thank those supporting, Councillor Velescu, for your words particularly. I also agree with a lot of what Councillor Hull said, and perhaps this is where it's not so much the devil in the detail, it's good things are in the detail, because certainly this is not a suggestion that we should get to water counting level. And I've discussed that at length with management, and nor did I ever, in my initial motions that we have amended, intend that. Secondly, when it comes to overall spending from area to area, we do know that there's only a percentage of people that use the big ticket items, such as our new Civic Centre and the Aquatic Centre. I'm a member of the Aquatic Centre and I will certainly attend the Civic Centre, and I'm an attendee of libraries. So I'm not speaking for myself here, but I'm speaking for probably the majority of people that do not turn up at those places. However, when people are making major outlays over a period of 5 to 10 years, in the form of their rates, they should be able to expect some reasonable visibility of product in their respective wards. Now, I'm not saying absolute equality, but I am saying reasonable equity. And when you look at, for instance, my suburb of Marino, and I'm not being subjective here, I'm being objective, because when I first moved in or contemplated moving in, I was shock horror about the suburb, but there's not one tree-scaped street in Marino. There are many, many unpaved footpaths. There are terrible verge situations. It's a bomb site, basically. And we are really starting to look towards a serious development at the entrance of the suburb. So there's all sorts of issues that are starting to interrelate. We have to get our acts together in each corner of our council. And the motion I've put is the means by which we do the checks and balances. Certainly the matrices are essential, but this is a further layer that will enable us to ensure that things are generally right from east to west, north to south.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that Council include the Residential Density Preservation Development Plan Amendment, DPA, in the priorities set at the Strategic Direction Committee, SDSC, in February 2015. Administration prepare a brief to DPTI in preparation for elected members' forum on the 21st of April 2015 regarding the scope on the review of the Greater Adelaide 30-year plan. This brief should address the concerns being raised regarding urban infill across the city of Marion. Mr. Mayor, what triggered this off was that I actually put to the administration a notice of motion calling for an embargo on all developments that required the demolition of one house and putting up anything greater than one for one. That was ruled to be ultra vires, in other words, beyond our powers, And therefore, I said to the administration, well, that being the case, can you provide me with a solution, an option that I could take to the council to address the issue at hand? The issue at hand, members, is significant. There was dismay by sections of my community about the fact that we didn't pick this up as part of our DPAs to be considered. This is my attempt to try and address that. The timing of it is important. We know that we've got DIPTI coming to see us on the 21st of April. Obviously, the message to the government is to actually say to them, well, look, the urgency for this issue is enough to have the council request an additional DPA. Because in the past, as you know, we were told that we'd be fined at 3. So that's what the intent of this motion is. The interesting part of it is that one of the DPAs that we picked was the stormwater DPA. Terminology, I forget, but that's the stormwater, basically to pick up the stormwater agreement that we have in the City of Holthouse Bay. These two should really be linked. It's difficult to do one without the other, in my opinion. Because if there is actually increased residential density, particularly on the western side of the Sturt River, you actually diminish or challenge your potential to actually deliver on stormwater catchment. The two should be done together. So, you know, that's something that I said when we were actually at the Flinders building at Tonsley when we discussed this. Members, that's pretty much it. We're just asking for the government to allow us to put forward another DPA that is, in our opinion, in our ward in particular. It seems that the Warrakowie ward is copping the brunt of the residential development. Your ward might be next, particularly in the north. Your ward may well be next because as the urban infill increases, it will need somewhere to go. And unfortunately, the 30-year plan and our current DPA actually allows that to happen. And hence, there's more pressure on open space, as Councillor Pfeiffer mentioned earlier tonight. So I just urge you to consider this. It's just going to give us a bit of a leg up to try and get the government to actually allow us to put forward the DPA, because every day there are residential density allowed that is actually hard to turn around. In fact, once it's done and you can't actually just go along with demolition.
Yes, thank you, Your Worship. I'd just like to add a few points as well. I completely share Councillor Hull's views. He's right on the money. There's one point that we also need in the agreement. The argument is that if we were to look at making an amendment to reduce our densities in one ward, then we need to pick that density up somewhere else in another ward. With our current DPAs, we're actually picking up density in our southern wards, and we're not getting anything for that. We're actually we're blowing an opportunity to rectify some of the perhaps over-densification that's happening in our northern wards. And I think this is a very, very important point to consider when we're making a judgment on this.
Look, I think that the important thing is that we look to avoid some of the problems in the other areas that we faced throughout the ward. This was an issue that has been ongoing. I know in the Mullawirra ward and what was previously the West ward. But I think it's an important point that Councillor Pryor made, because we are the first residential character DPA. Character area 17 is probably affecting 50 houses, 40, 50 houses, if that. And the residential southern suburbs DPA, which means less, which means more densification, is affecting one, pretty much a third or something like that of our council area. First of all, that seems like we're sort of selling ourselves short a little bit. But more importantly, combining the two, putting them both up at the same time, means that the problems that we're having already in some parts of the city where there is the rampant subdivision is not duplicated. The issues were, especially in some of the new suburbs, the roads are thinner. You're having the subdivisions, you've got the situation where you've got a lot more parking on both sides, you're losing off-street parking due to extra driveways. It is absolutely chaotic, and it causes a lot of angst in the community, and especially those that have been there a while, because they've seen their suburb transform into something they don't recognise, they don't feel comfortable. We want to, you know, one of our goals, one of our pillars is for people to feel connected, and actually they don't feel connected, and they don't feel, I guess, at peace, and that's important. You know, let's densify it, let's do it properly. I think this DPA process I've heard mentioned is really just a way to keep councils busy, but we don't actually do anything. You know, we need to have a bit more active control as to what we do in our suburbs. And I guess part of my concern is that you've got certain lobby groups talking about amalgamating current councils and things like that. Considerable majority of those are to do with people that make money out of subdivision in our areas. We have to live here. Local councils should represent what local community wants. So I do thank the elected members for putting that in there. I'd love to have, you know, the four on there. I think the first one's pretty much a no-brainer as far as it's not a very big issue. So hopefully we can get those. It's a good mix. We're looking at stormwater issues, and it's something that will affect the whole city. And most importantly, it's trying to avoid the problems and prevent some of the problems in the less developed areas that we are having at the moment.
Move as written. Thank you, Your Worship.
Mr. Mayor, this is not the first time this motion has come up. I moved the exact same motion in the previous council. I didn't get support for it. Something tells me tonight that will change with this great new council, because in terms of the building, we need to actually completely satisfy ourselves that all the options available to us for the building have been explored. Without going to the minister to explore those options for the roundhouse, we'll never know. If we decide to knock it over tomorrow without exploring this motion, we'll never know what we could have done with it. If the minister comes back and says, no, I'm actually going to stick to my guns, you can only use it for recreation and, Mr. Mayor, help me out with this. Yes. It means that the City of Marion might have to expend $600,000 minimum on it, right, which is really an affronting prospect. For what? With no business case, no options, no possible commercial use or part commercial use where we can actually justify the expenditure of ratepayers' money. So, you know, we really need to do this. If the minister comes back and says no, sadly, even I would have to start to wonder about my love affair with this round building. Because it is a great spot, because, you know, you've got a 300-degree vista of not only the wetland but also the Marion Vineyards across the road and Oakens Road. It has got a lot of potential. And it's for that reason that the City of Marion, the Oaklands Estate Residents Association, want that retained. Now, I agree with them, but we need, you know, in all fairness to the ratepayers of Marion collectively, there needs to be a case. There needs to be an absolute case. If we explore this, at least I can go and front up to the Oaklands Estate Residents Association or any other group of people for that matter and say, look, we've had a look at this. This is what happened. This is why we made the decision we did.
Just for the benefit of those in the gallery, obviously with the roundhouse, it's not being used. There is a cost to having it subsist, and our options are either get rid of it, just seal it up for the moment until we decide, or actually do something else with it. And there's this restriction because it's given to us with a dedicated purpose, as Councillor Hull outlined. So unless we can get rid of that purpose, we can't even think of the cafe, discotheque, commercial use, whatever, whatever. So that's why there's some inclination to write such a letter. All right, I'll put the motion. Oh, no, I won't. Councillor Hutchinson?
I'm speaking against.
Oh, Worship. Please do.
Members, this is escalating commitment at its best. It's escalating liabilities for the council. Keep hanging on to this thing is just compounding our future debt problems and everything else that goes along with it. And I am very sceptical about what we will actually get there.
Other speakers. Councillor Valescu.
I think that it's probably doesn't have enough parking to support the economic activity that would be required to fund the running of such a place or other activities not allowed in the rules at the moment. I think also that's not taking into account what it would cost to rebuild the area, and I don't think council really has an appetite to spend money that we do have to spend on rebuilding. There are some problems with footings, things like that, not catastrophic, but would consider need considerable expense. I think people look at it and goes, well, that's a great place, the great building. But when you look at the practicality of it, then you find out that it really isn't feasible. We're looking at $600,000 as well as ongoing maintenance. And the fact that we might be stuck with running it, which is probably more significant, we have to start doing staffing and things like that. There are other wetlands interpretation centres around the place. It's a great area there. We're going to have lots of activity there. I think that might just be one thing that has to go. I think it is... I don't think that it's really worth going to ask for other activities, because those other activities aren't going to be successful, in my opinion. So that's why I won't support it. Generally, I would be wanting to give things a go, but I just think there's no point here. That's why.
Thank you, Your Worship. This one, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Look, this is, of course, the 100th anniversary of the Gallipoli landing coming up in a couple of weeks' time. It's a pretty special time. We've had a lot of people out there in the community spending a lot of time and a lot of effort. We have too, and a lot of money for that matter, on actually getting, you know, great celebrations up and running for the celebration and the centenary of ANZAC. It's a funny little anomaly that if ANZAC Day falls on a weekday, you get a public holiday. If ANZAC Day falls on a Sunday, you get a public holiday Monday. If ANZAC Day falls on a Saturday, uh-uh. So what this motion is attempting to redress that. However, in saying that, the Saturday is technically a public holiday in itself, if you can count that. Look, for such a solemn occasion and for such an occasion that is worth us celebrating as a community, I think it is. It's not about getting an extra day off of work. This is about actually taking the time to appreciate and understand what has gone before us and what has been a defining point in modern Australian history. And actually taking the time to absorb that and celebrate that in the way that you see fit. So this motion attempts to address that in two ways, for the Mayor to write to the Premier of the State with a copy sent to the Governor. That is because under the relevant piece of legislation, it's the Governor that proclaims holidays. Requesting that a special holiday be proclaimed for Monday the 27th of April 2015, and for the consideration of a legislative amendment to the Holidays Act to enable public holiday Mondays to occur whenever Anzac Day falls on the Saturday in future years, just so that, you know, it can be treated in the same way as New Year's Day and Australia Day and Christmas Day in the future. So that's it. Thank you, members.
Happy to support this. There is even more irony to this, that recently we had a public holiday for horse races. Now, I'm not going to diminish the importance of the horse race, but how can you possibly have a situation as like this that Councillor Fife was described, yet we actually had a public holiday where we had a day off for a horse race? So I think that you juxtaposition that alongside what this motion, and you'll have to actually ask the question, have we actually got our public holiday strategy in order in South Australia? I do ask that question, and it would be a shame, I think, if people were working on a day like this, where you might actually struggle to get to the dawn service and then have to go rushing off to work. You know, like, there are other public holidays that I can think of, particularly being a Republican, that are less consequence to this very motion. That's the point I'm making.
Seriously, I think we need to be focusing on our ward issues rather than these games of trying to create some media attention, because this is not really relevant to the city of Marion in my mind. Neither is probably the next motion. However, this is unnecessary.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Worship. I have to vehemently go against this particular motion, and I do accept the sentiment that has been expressed as to why this motion has been put, but I will just give a bit of history on this. I actually was in the services when there was a lot of arguing and pushing to have Anzac Day public holiday actually recognised on the day. We had the problem in the past that when it wasn't and it was a public holiday Monday, that we had a lot of loss of people really recognising Anzac Day and what it was about. So the RSLs and a lot of the defence organisations, they all fought for this to be recognised as a public holiday on Anzac Day. Particularly on the Saturday, what happens on Saturday with it being a public holiday there, the march is able to take place in the city of Adelaide and the shops do not open until after the march is finished. If we pushed for a public holiday on the Monday, we would then be asking for two public holidays, the Saturday and the Monday, and I know the shopkeepers would be dead against that. We really need to keep this holiday as recognising the actual day. And during the week, that it is the actual day that we celebrated on that day. That is what has been argued from all the RSLs. That is what people want for the celebration of that day. I know that there'll be some, and myself included, in various years gone past where we might have had quite a celebration on the day. We'd love an extra public holiday to get over our hangovers the next day. But we have to remember what this day is for. And really recognise that we need the celebration on that day and not a public holiday on another day.
Yeah, it's a bit of a contradiction. Thank you, Your Worship. But the reason why this is important is because we do have significant business interests in the city of Marion. My take and my opinion in dealing with people in the business industry in the area suggests that it is not an issue, even when dealing internationally or interstate. I commend the motion.
Well, given that we should have a ward focus, I think we should have a different time zone for each ward. because, you know, it does take a while to get from Halleck Cove Headland to here, And I think that the extra bit of daylight that they get down there could help their street trees and their streetscape. And but I'm hoping that somebody might second this, Mr. Mayor.